Questions and Answers on the Bible. Chapter 91. Should Christians drink stimulating or intoxicating liquors? We have on record that Christ made water into wine at the marriage feast. Is that sufficient testimony that Christians may indulge in a glass of beer? When a man is converted, does he wander from the true path of Christ by taking an occasional glass of beer as a stimulant? We have often talked in these columns about the wine which Christ made at Cana, but this question brings up a phase of the subject that we have not before considered in this connection, and therefore we shall find it profitable to take it up again from the beginning. We shall try to do it so simply that there can be no confusion. The wine had been used up, and there were 6 empty water pots standing by. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the water pots with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said unto them, "Draw out now, and bear unto the governor of the feast." And they bore it. And when the governor of the feast tasted it, he perceived that it was better wine than that which they had at the beginning. The wine God makes. This was natural wine, such as God makes every year. The miracle was to show us God's agency in the products of the earth, especially in the fruit of the vine, and incidentally to teach us the kind of wine men ought to drink. It should be understood that the element of time is not a factor in any miracle. That is to say, the miraculous nature of an action does not depend upon its having been done quickly. The miracle consists in the doing of it, whether long or short time be taken. For example, in the case before us, the miracle does not consist in the fact that water was turned into wine in the space of a few minutes, but in the fact that it was done. If the miracle takes a year to accomplish it, the miracle is nonetheless. If anybody thinks otherwise, let him try it. Let him take a year, or 10 years, and at the end of that time he will be no nearer producing wine from water than at the beginning. But God can and does do it. He is constantly doing it in vines all over the earth. Usually he occupies several months in the process, but at the wedding feast he did it in a few minutes in the true vine. Christ is the beginning, even the source or beginning of the creation of God. In him everything is created, and in him all things consist. That which is in him is life. His blood, his life, is pure and perfect, and everything that comes from him is perfect. In the stream of life that flows from the slain lamb in the midst of the throne, there is no element of decay. It is the pure river of water of life, clear as crystal. Thus the wine that the Lord makes is not poisonous, but pure and life-giving. The word intoxicating means poisoning, and poisoning means death. Therefore it is clear that the wine which the Lord makes the fruit of the vine, is not intoxicating. We can demonstrate this for ourselves. The wine which God yearly produces from water is hermetically sealed in small flasks grouped in clusters. One may take of it even to repletion, but it will not produce intoxication any more than fresh apples will. Alcohol not a product of nature. Alcohol is not a product of nature, not a creature of God. 1 Timothy 4 verse 4, God never made alcohol, nor any fermented or malt liquors of any kind. If grapes or grain were allowed to remain as God makes them, they would never have stimulating or intoxicating effects. It is only by artificial processes, or when the fruits and grains have been crushed so soaked and allowed to decompose, that alcohol, which stimulates and intoxicates, is formed. Now what God never does in all creation, we may be sure he did not do that day in Cana. Therefore there is no connection whatever between the wine that Jesus made and the beer that men make. To say that because Jesus made wine from water therefore I may drink beer or any other intoxicating liquor, has no more reason in it than to say that because he was righteous, I may sin. We have no warrant to pronounce sentence upon anybody, and we do not need to, for each one can answer for himself whether or not the making and drinking of beer is following in the steps of Jesus. It does not seem that there can be any question as to whether or not Christians, or anybody else, for that matter, should take that which intoxicates. To put the case vividly, what would you think of one who should stand by the river of life, a few hundred yards below where it issues from the throne, and mix poison with it before drinking it, saying that he liked it better so? You would think it a sacrilegious act, and would say that he was despising God's good gift. Now that is really what men do when they take intoxicating liquor. They show lack of appreciation for God's pure life stream. They slight the good and perfect gift, and choose that which is perverted and degenerate. What is a stimulant? But what about stimulation? That is so much milder a term than intoxication that many people are deceived by it. But the difference is really only one of degree, for the first effect of all intoxicants is to stimulate. If we examine the matter closely, we shall see that the use of stimulants of any kind whatever is directly opposed to the principles of Christianity. Take the simple meaning of the word. Stimulus is a pure Latin word, meaning a pointed, pricking instrument, a goad for driving cattle, slaves, etc. Stimulant and stimulation are from the Latin verb stimulo, which means to prick with a goad, to prick or goad on, to goad, torment, vex, trouble, disturb. Do you think that this is the way God treats his children? Does he goad them on like cattle or slaves? Does he vex or trouble them? Far from it. He gives rest and peace. Those who hearken to him have peace like a river, the river of life, calmly flowing, and are not goaded and harassed and worried. Instead of being spurred on to exert and exhaust their strength, they are continually renewing their strength, so as to keep the freshness of youth. A stimulant is a whip, a goad. When does one take his? Occasional stimulant, provided of course that he is moderate, and takes it only occasionally? It is when he is tired and worn out, is it not? When his nerves are unstrung, and his muscles are relaxed. What is the result? He feels new energy for the moment, and can think clearly and work with vigor. But he has received no strength whatever. He has simply forced himself to do what he really was unfit to do. That is cruelty. If you put a horse in the place of the man, you will see that is so. Your horse is exhausted. He has worked all day, and ought to be in the stable resting, with a good feed. He comes to a hill and, although he is willing enough, he stops. Then you ply the whip, and force him on, and you prove that he can do more work yet. But you know that the whip added no strength to him. It clearly took strength out of him, making him less fit for future service. Time is lost, not gained, by working either horses or men when they are tired. And when they are not tired, but in possession of health, they need no beating to incite them to work. The use of stimulants is slavery. Now, to show that stimulation is absolutely contrary to the principles of Christ, God made man to have dominion, to be ruler over all things, and hence absolutely free. Christ says, "If you continue in my word, then are you my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." John 8 verses 31 to 32, God redeems the life of his children from destruction, so that their youth is renewed like the eagles. He renews their strength, which is far different from giving them the appearance of strength for a time, while actually diminishing their vitality. Is it not self-evident that the person who is goaded to his work by a stimulant is not free? The master does not have to be driven to do his own works. He does it because it is his work, and he loves it. He finds pleasure in working. Indeed, he finds more rest and comfort in activity than he could find in idleness. As soon as he has to be driven to the work, he ceases to be master, and becomes a slave. But the very essence of Christianity is liberty. Slavery is opposed to the gospel. The service of God is love, and love is not and cannot be forced. It must come spontaneously. This is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous. To do even that which is right, because we are forced to do it, is not righteousness. There are no people on earth that conform more closely to the laws and regulations laid down for them than the convicts in prison, but there is no virtue in their deed. The sum of the matter is that no man ought ever to be driven or to drive himself to do anything whatever. The gospel is the good news of salvation, wholeness, grace to help in every time of need, from God who is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. The help and strength placed at our disposal is infinite, and it is the Christian's business to become so thoroughly in touch with it, and so familiar with the means by which it may be appropriated, that it will be his delight to do the will of the Lord, even as a strong man rejoices to run a race. When one is strong in the Lord and in the power of his might, he will have no need of stimulants to goad him to any legitimate task. The gospel is intensely practical. It concerns itself with the whole spirit, soul, and body, and therefore the strength of the Lord and the power of his might pertains to the body as well as the mind. Our God is the healer, and he has promised to take disease away from those who keep his commandments. When Jesus returned from his baptism, he went about all Galilee, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease. And The gospel of the kingdom, which he preached, is the same that he commissions his servants to preach today and until the end. Therefore in him we may always be ready to every good work and take keen delight in doing it. Our work should be a pleasure, not a drag upon us. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Jesus calls us to come and learn of him, and to take his yoke upon us, and find rest, because his yoke is easy, and his burden light. Therefore, seeing we have this ministry, as we have received mercy, we faint not. Literally, we do not get tired. It is no rash assertion that this joyful rest and service is possible for every Christian who has faith and zeal enough to study and submit to the working of the life by which all good work is done. If you are tired, the proper thing to do is to rest. This will not always be by going to bed. Sometimes, indeed, very often, the weariness is due to poison in the system, on account of a too liberal diet and lack of exercise or fresh air. Regulate the diet, cleanse the system, take regular and abundant exercise and fresh air, keep the stream of life in constant flow, and then you will do all the work you ought to do, from pure love of it. And when you do not feel fresh for any task, that will be a signal that you should wait and gather new strength. Whoever does not feel this freshness for his daily duties should make it his first business to search diligently for the cause of his weariness and languor, and having found it, to remove it in the strength of the Lord. Thus, trusting and living in the Lord, you will go from strength to strength, and even in this present world will have a vivid foretaste of the time when you shall go forth and gamble as calves of the stall,